This is the Norris Group's Real Estate Investor Radio Show, the award-winning show dedicated to thought leaders shaping the real estate industry and local experts revealing their insider tips to succeed in an ever-changing real estate market. Hosted by author, investor, and hard money lender, Bruce Norris.
Hi, thanks for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and once again, we are with Mike Cantu, and he has obviously, most of us know who Mike is. And Mike, welcome back to our show.
Thanks, Bruce. Thanks for having me.
Now, unlike me, you did a couple of things that I did not do. And I think, you know, one of the things that you did is you pursued education a lot. And I got to say that the first seminar I ever attended, I actually gave. So that's how suspicious I was of education. And so, you know, we came at it from very different directions. And so one of the things that your goal was is you always wanted to own a rental portfolio. And where did that come from? Where did you get the word that was the ticket?
Well, it started originally, Bruce, I wanted a fourplex. Mick had built a fourplex, and he explained, we went over the numbers, and he said, you could live for free and actually make money living here. And I started playing with the numbers thinking I could actually probably make enough money to where I might not have to even work to where I could live here. And I'm thinking, this sounds really good. And then it was Mick that had the houses. Mick had a rental portfolio. And of course I started asking questions again. Then I got the great idea that life has the recurring expenses. And as I started getting rentals together, eventually I became a parent, a single parent, and I thought, okay, we've got these recurring expenses, and I love the idea of having a house to take care of each one of life's expenses. And so I set out on a goal to have some free and clear houses. The first one was to take care of food. So we had a food house. Then we had an insurance house that took care of auto insurance, homeowner insurance, medical insurance. We had a utilities house. We had a gas house so we could drive anywhere. And eventually we got a house together for each of life's recurring expenses. And I realized at that point I was home free, that it was mission accomplished, and got a lot more houses besides that. But that was one of the original plans, was live in a fourplex, not have to work. See, I've been planning my retirement since fourth grade, Bruce. I remember this. I would sit in the classroom looking out the window thinking there's a great big world out there with all kinds of stuff to do. What the heck am I doing here? So, yeah, I've never been a fan of being told what to do and working for someone else. I realized long, long time ago, you've only got two choices in this world. You're either captain of your own ship, or you're a deckhand on someone else's. And growing up with the discipline that I did and being told what to do and can't stand that, I thought, that's not how I'm going to spend the rest of my life. That all I've ever wanted to do was wake up every day and have the freedom to choose what I want to do. And Monday through Friday, it's always been disciplined towards work, but at least I get to do it my way. And early on, I realized I had a big blank slate in front of me and put some serious thought into how do I want to paint this thing up. And it all revolved around creating an income stream that would grow. And early on, it was just the income stream. And then as the years went by, I realized that the quality of income is much more important than the quantity of income. And what do you have to do to get it to come in monthly? How much babysitting? And that kind of shaped the direction I went. I realized that a nicer house in a nicer neighborhood gave you a better tenant selection. And that as I look back now, I've got lots and lots of tenants have been with me 10 years, a few of them over 20 years. The record that I have, I bought a house in Claremont back in 2002. The couple had been there 39 years. They were both retired, and he passed away some years ago, but Kate's still there. She's past the 50-year mark. I'm going on 20 as my tenant. So I realized, and one of the big things is the turnover. Early on, I believed everybody. I didn't do proper screening, and it's a miracle I'm still in business. That there was a point in my life where people asked me, what do you do for a living? And I told them, white paint, beige carpet, every day, all day. That's all I do.
I got to ask you a question. You said an interesting word. Mick had a reaction to when you started saying you wanted free and clear houses.
Oh, yes. Now Mick did not agree with that. Mick is a leverage person, and it's worked extremely well for him. However, I early on just wanted to get my core income set up so that I had choices. And he did a big exchange. He got rid of his apartments, and I'll never forget when he wanted 20 houses. I offered up 10, and I ended up selling him 14 houses. And I got just a hair less than $1 million out of it when all the dust settled. I think I missed it by about $4,000. But when I ran into Mick 2 days later, he's all excited and said, "What are you going to do with all that money?" And I smiled back and said, "I spent it." Then he got really excited and said, "What did you buy?" And I said, "Nothing." Then he got concerned and really concerned and said, "What happened?" And I said, "I paid off 9 more houses. I'm officially out of the rat race. I'm financially free," and went off on a tangent. And once again, his face wadded up like that piece of tinfoil. And in the most disgusted voice I ever heard, he asked me, actually he stepped in, we're almost nose to nose, and he said, "I don't remember what seminar it was that we went to that taught you to take your hard-earned after-tax dollars and pay off single-digit fixed-rate amortizing positive cash flow rent house mortgages. Can you please refresh my memory?"
So outside of that, he was really happy for you.
Yeah. Oh, and Bruce, I walked around for 2 days studying my shoelaces, thinking I let it slip through my fingers. I blew it, and on. And then Saturday morning came. I was supposed to be working. I had plans. It was raining, coming down sideways, and I just realized I'm out of the rat race. I don't have to do anything that I don't want to do, for the most part. And no, I was happy to have paid him off. And, you know, I tell people since then, I paid off lots and lots more houses. I just don't tell Mick. They're different philosophies.
That's a good idea not to tell him.
Now, I do have to give Mick credit. At his age now, he has paid off a boatload of his houses, and he's played the leverage game. But if I'm not mistaken, I would be willing to bet that he still has some loans out there, because I think the thought of Mick being unleveraged would just be too much for him to handle.
That's funny.
He's done so well with it over the years that it's a part of him.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, yeah. But I understand, you know, you were the first one that had me thinking about that free and clear. I thought, and I'm a little competitive. So, yeah, you know, you got to get your, if Mike can do it, well, maybe I can do it too, so.
Yeah, and Bruce, you know as well as I do, if you get enough of them, then you have the choices, and it becomes a game. And I love being a real estate entrepreneur, and I play a game every single month. I win no matter what, because the game I play is, as an entrepreneur, can I out-earn the net rents that I bring in? And sometimes I do, but quite often I don't, and I think it's all good. It ends up in the same place, but I am competitive against the inanimate objects and think, can I do better than the objects? And it's a little bit humbling sometimes when I don't, but I think I sure am glad they're in my world.
Yeah, that's funny. You're competing against yourself. That's a good one. I like that.
Well, Bruce, there is a lot of satisfaction when I out-earn the rents. I think I did it. Okay, that was a good effort, and take that.
What house can I pay off now? That's the next thing. All right. At one of our lunches, I asked you, what's the one thing that's non-negotiable in your day? And you thought it over for a day or so before you responded. And do you remember what your answer was?
Absolutely. I remember, first of all, I was spouting off stuff. And then I thought, no, if you write a big enough check, you can buy that, that, and that. And pretty soon I realized the better part of my day was for sale if you really wanted it and were willing to pay for it. But the one thing that I did not compromise this morning on, is my reading. I read for an hour a day, and I think that has been probably the biggest game changer, was seeking the alternative thought processes that are out there versus the scripted life that we're taught in school. To go to school, get a job, or go to school and go to college and get a better job, and work till you're 65 and get a gold watch and a frozen turkey and about half the pay. And I just thought that didn't do it for me. So I have been in search of alternative thought processes and came across some great minds to where I thought, I'm so glad I didn't have to figure this out by trial and error. So I'm an avid reader. It's a lot of self-improvement, a lot of real estate, an occasional biography, very, very little fiction, if any at all.
Very little what in at all?
Very little fiction. Fiction.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. Somebody was in a car one time and they looked at the tapes. You know, I had CDs at the time, and they're like sort of like mixed face. It was all kind of crunched in. He said, "You don't have one piece of music here." I said, "Yeah, you're right. That doesn't help me."
I actually do have one mixed CD that my daughter made me in my truck, but it's in a stack of about 40 that you're going to have to sift and sort through to find it. So there's 39, 40 CDs in my truck. And yeah, it's all educational stuff. Good stuff.
When you mentioned something about your morning, actually, you know, we arranged this time at 9:30 so you could have the morning that you wanted. So you have a ritual after you make your bed. there's
actually the bed doesn't get made until right before I get in the shower. So I do get out of bed and it goes for about 45 minutes to an hour unmade. But before I leave the house, see, that was one of the things my dad said, you accomplish something by making your bed, start the day off with an accomplishment and build on it from there.
Well, so you're doing this interview unshowered. Is that what you're saying?
Nope. I'm clean, showered, everything else. That morning routine, Bruce, I've tried most of my adult life to be an early morning person, and unless I go to bed while the sun's still up, that's not going to happen. And I typically get in bed between 11 and midnight, closer to midnight, probably 4 or 5 nights a week. My watch will beat midnight, and I realize it's time to throw in the towel and call it a day. But I do get up by 7 o'clock every day. But I, as I explained to you, that I go through a metamorphosis. I say I go from a waste of skin into a human being, and it takes about an hour, hour and a half from start to finish. But no, I get up at 7, make a pot of coffee, go out, walk out the long, curvy driveway, get 2 newspapers, come back, make a pot of a cup of coffee, start reading the paper. Then I end up writing in my journal. I read. Now, that hour of reading every day, rarely does it get all connected to 1 hour. There is a cooking timer on my kitchen table that's always set at 60, and I just hit go, and I read, and if I get interrupted, phone rings, something, if I haven't blocked out the time for specific reading, I use the cooking timer, and I finished my reading yesterday, probably 6:30 in the evening. So it started in the morning. I got my hour in by the time the day was over. So it's not full. It's not the full hour in the morning. I always write in my journal a page or two, reflect on life, good, bad, what my feelings and thoughts are.
Every day.
Every day.
Wow.
Let me back up. I'm guilty. I'll miss 1 or 2 days a week, but typically I get at least 5 days a week in my journal. I've done that for years and years. I try and do a whole page. I'm grateful for many things. I usually recap at the end all the gratitude that I have for everything in my world. And
that's cool.
And
That's very cool, Mike. I mean, honestly, that's an amazing. It's an amazingly beneficial. I'll call it ritual. In other words, the things that you're doing, it's kind of not rocket science, but it's probably the basis of a lot of your success to have thought so carefully about how you spend your day.
Well, and then I realized my least favorite part of that is the exercising, but that's mandatory. And, you know, it's back to the little disciplines. If it's easy to do, it's easy not to do. And a lot of the stuff I do is easy to do, but the exercise part isn't all that easy. And so that's the one I struggle with. But I do make it a point every day, get my exercise in. And now I love to meditate. I'm only good for 10 to 15 minutes, and I've tried that in the morning, but I find that the afternoon, if I'm having a rough day, somewhere around 3-4 o'clock, quite often I'll come home, and 10 or 15 minutes of meditating just to clear it all out. It's almost like I'm regathering myself back together, putting it back together for the second shift. That does wonders for me too. So yeah, 10, 15 minutes of silence. I do not get in the lotus position. It's more Indian style. That's as close as I get. But nope, I just clear it all out, and that works for me too. That happens every single day.
Still have a goal list?
Absolutely. In fact, I this morning, my friend Dante, I was setting him up with some work, and he says, "How many lists do you have?" I said, "My life is a list, and I have lists to manage my lists, but if I can't check stuff off and make reasonable progress and measurable progress in reasonable time, what am I doing with my days?" So the lists help with that. Nothing excites me more than running a line through something that I set out to accomplish or get done. And this morning, once again, I went through my daily, weekly job list to get done this week. I scratched off a bunch of stuff, didn't get everything done. But then from there, I went into my goal book. Every day, I spend somewhere between 5 and 15 minutes in my goal book, looking at pictures, updating it. And it makes me think, what do I want to do with the rest of my life? To where it's a constant every day. What do I want to be, do, have, see? And I do give that conscious thought. How do I want to spend my day? See, I get lots of opportunities brought to me, and some of them are pretty darn lucrative sounding or looking. But the first question is, how does this affect my day-to-day reality? What's involved to me? Do I have to come back here? And do I have to be involved on a daily basis? Who am I involved with? And those are the questions that I run by myself. It's not so much how much money can I make, it's what else is involved of my time, and am I going to get frustrated, and do I have to do traffic to get there, and a lot of other questions that are important to me at this point in life. It's the quality of my days, how do I want to spend them, and what do I want to accomplish? So I do put lots of thought into that.
I think, you know, what you're talking about came to play when the crash was coming up. So I know since you had been affected by the 90s downturn, you were aware that 2000 and after 2006 or 7 could get pretty ugly, and yet you decided to keep all of your rental houses. And I remember thinking the only way that you did that was that you had written a job description on those files. And
yes,
you didn't see a reason to change the job description. And I thought that was fascinating.
Well, Bruce, if we have a food house, the last thing I want to do is sell that place. I'll get skinny real quick. And if I get rid of the gas house, I'm not driving very far.
It didn't matter to you if it went up or down. It mattered that it kept sending you a check every month.
Right. Now, see, Bruce, the whole rental portfolio was based on cash flow. That was my vision, was the cash flow part of it. And I tell people there was a very interesting byproduct of the cash flow that happened, and that was millions and millions of dollars of equity fell out of the sky and landed on the rent houses, but it didn't change the cash flow part of it. And I remember talking to you at the beginning of the downturn. You asked me if I was going to sell, and I explained that that was almost 30 years of my life getting that portfolio together, and it was the best of the best, and that I would, going out of the gate, I would have to pay 15% capital gains tax. At the time, I think it was 10% state tax. I was going to have recapture on depreciation. When all the dust settled, I was going to end up with 60 cents on the dollar. So to break even, to get back in the game, I would have to buy in at 60 cents on the dollar just to get back to the same place. I thought, why don't just sweep this whole pile off the table and start over with a new pile? And that's what I did. To where, and you had mentioned millions of dollars grew equity or grew wings, and or millions of dollars of my equity grew wings and flew away, but the cash flow didn't change. And during that downturn, rents didn't skip a beat. They came in, it kept me very comfortable, and in the last several years, I watched every bit of that equity and then some return. I think, okay, I just went on a flight for a while, but it's back home. But that still doesn't change anything. That the intent was to never harvest the equity. It was to be free with the cash flow.
Yep. I remember our lunches. You had mentioned to me, we probably had lunch in, say, 2010. And we both had lunches with other people that had quite a different experience. They had a lot of leverage, or they had lost a lot of their stuff. They hadn't expected a downturn. And, you know, you and I are talking about, boy, aren't things bad out there? And then you go, okay, well, what do you want for lunch? And it was like it wasn't our reality. We had escaped that because we had prepared to not be affected by it. As a matter of fact, we had prepared to take advantage of it.
Yes, and I remember being very aware of where we were headed and looking at it and thinking, is there anything else I want to get rid of? I used to get frustrated when 2004, 5, and 6, where stuff was just going up by the hour. You had to look at your watch to see what the value of a property was. And I would start my day opening file cabinets, and I'd go through the folders, nothing here, and shut that one and open the next one. And there was nothing to sell that I wanted to get rid of. I remember John Schaub early on said, one of the best lessons I got in real estate was, he said, every year, get rid of your worst property, take it out to pasture and shoot it, and replace it with a better one, and eventually you will have no junk. And it dawned on me somewhere around 2004, I thought, wow, that came true. I have no junk, nothing I want to sell, and I've sold very little of it since then. I've replaced some of it with even better properties, but no, it's that. And Bruce, the lecture I gave the other day was, I have flipped mostly wholesale, but plowed through over 1,500 houses in my 38 years. In looking at the pile of houses that I kept, the value of them is worth more than all of the dollars I made flipping and wholesaling combined, by far.
Wow.
And the moral of the story, I think, is it's, you can get rich flipping houses, but you can create some tremendous wealth by keeping them.
There was a project. You had told me that you walked or either rode or your bike by every day. It was a land, something that went wrong with land. And I remember you making a comment to yourself. You said to yourself, somebody ought to do something about that.
Oh, that is going to hurt telling the story, Bruce. Yes, it's right down the street from my place in Huntington, and I would walk or ride my bike down Huntington Street two blocks to get to the beach, and I had to go past this huge hole in the ground that was a development project that was started in the early 2000s, and it was going to be a huge townhouse and commercial project. It is now known as Pacific City. Well, it was just a big hole in the ground fenced off, and I'd go down Huntington Street on my way to the beach, and I'd come up First Street the other side of it on my way back. That was just the route I always took. And every time I'd say, someone needs to do something with this. If I was with somebody, I'd say the same thing. Well, sure enough, in 2012, somebody did. A guy a year younger than me. Oh, the banks, I read the article, were into this project, $880 million. I thought, ouch, that hurts. So I discounted everything. Well, a guy a year younger than me in 2012 bought it for $80 million.
Okay.
And I'm reading the article going, whoa. Then it said 6 months later, he flipped it for $135 million to a guy that was a year older than me. First guy's a year younger, second guy's a year older. They both had investment groups, and I thought, wow, he made $55 million. Well, the guy that paid $135 for it broke it into the three original pieces and sold them off to the three developers for $400 million. And I read the article, and to this day, that one really stings when I go by there, because I did have a friend, when I told him that story, he said, you know, I had the money to do that.
So there's still opportunity we can walk by every day, probably.
Absolutely. I mean, that's had that for years and years, and I watched the rebar get all rusty and just turned into a war zone looking place. But nope, there was some serious money harvested from that, and I knew better, and there you have it.
That's a great story. Only got about a minute and a half left. You're the biggest influence as far as a teacher in real estate. Who was that?
Jack. Did you say my biggest influence as far as a teacher?
Yeah, in real estate, yes.
Okay, I have my favorite top people, Bruce. You know them all, but it was Jack Miller, who's no longer with us, that Jack influenced me more than anybody by far. I followed him around the United States for over 20 years, and I remember the day he passed away. I took the afternoon off, and I went in my office, counted up 56 manuals from seminars I'd been to, another 40, 50 booklets that he had written, and I just, I learned so much from him, and more so, not only was it the techniques, but it was the attitudes that went with it.
Fantastic.
And then, of course, there's John Schaub, who I just love everything that he's written and taught. Pete Fortunato, I loved your stuff, Bruce. So, yeah, it's a small group that has had the major influence on me, and but Jack was head and shoulders above everybody.
You know what's good, great, and you know Mick has been a teacher more like one-on-one, and you've got into the public speaking, and you know when you speak, there's more information per minute probably than anybody that I've ever heard, and it's this accumulation of your constant education. I mean, that's always been amazing to me. There's probably, if I've ever attended a seminar, I can look around and go, there's Mike. What's he doing here?
No, and actually, Bruce, I have a phone call to return this afternoon. I got a call yesterday asking me if I wanted to sign up and get the discount to John Schaub and Pete Fortunato's class in the fall. And I'm making that call and saying, absolutely, I'll be there. I wouldn't miss it.
Tell him I'll go with you and we'll split. We'll get a 50% discount, and I have a AAA card.
And we'll timeshare the chair.
Mike, thanks. It's been a great pleasure talking with you.
The Norris Group originates and services loans in California and Florida under California DRE License 01219911, Florida Mortgage Lender License 1577, and NMLS License 1623669. For more information on hard money lending, go to thenorrisgroup.com and click the Hard Money tab.
For more information on hard money loans and upcoming events with the Norris Group, check out thenorrisgroup.com. For information on passive investing with trust deeds, visit tngtrustdeeds.com.